Well, Julia, once again, the Blue Jays disappoint to end the series. A bit of a tough watch today. They make me seriously consider gazing directly into the eclipse tomorrow. I'm not gonna wear those glasses. I don't want to have to see the offense to like look like this anymore.
Oh my! I was not expecting that this early in the program.
Boy, good heavens! I really actually think this game did show the stark comparison between these two teams and really between the Jays and most teams right now, right? The Blue Jays in that third inning, okay? So they get their cleanup hitter to draw a bases-loaded walk, and then their five hitter watches a pitch go by him to strand the bases loaded. Heel wriggles out of a bases-loaded jam of his own making. And then later in that same inning, the Yankees get their cleanup hitter, Rizzo, to draw a bases-loaded walk, and then their five hitter, some guy named Giancarlo Stanton, blasts a grand slam to blow the game open. That's the difference right now. The Yankees and a lot of other teams, not just the New York Yankees, but lots of teams have guys who can make you pay, and the Jays just don't right now.
That's right. It can be really frustrating, not only for fans, but I'm sure for the players too, to see, you know, a team load the bases twice and just not be able to capitalize big as we saw the Yankees do in this game. And then it really kind of dawns on you how important it is to have guys that can do quote-unquote damage, to quote John Schneider here, in those middle-of-the-order slots, right? Alejandro Kirk could not get the job done today. Yes, he walked in a run when the bases were loaded, but that was about it, and that's not necessarily what you were expecting from your number five and number four and number five hitters, especially in those types of situations with fewer than two outs, so you have some wiggle room. You can try new things. You can swing a little bit with a little bit more power. And the Blue Jays just couldn't get that done. And I understand, show that perhaps Justin Turner was not available today. He did play third base yesterday. It was a quick turnaround from night game to day game. The end of a very long road trip, this marathon of a road trip that the Blue Jays had to start the season. I understand that he wasn't available, but then when he's not there, you kind of realize again how important he is and how much the Blue Jays are missing other guys that can do that. I'm sure that we're going to talk about Bo Bichette, who again, you know, went back to looking a little bit more like himself today, driving the ball, kind of using the whole field with those line drives that are so characteristic of Bo. But the truth of the matter is that the Blue Jays are still lacking the offense that is necessary to compete, especially in the American League East. And that is something that we saw here against the Yankees. I got to say, I wasn't too convinced, about the Yankees' strong start to the season. And I still think that there are very clear question marks around their starting rotation and even the bullpen. I'm not too sure that they have enough to go the distance here, but they do look very, very good. And what an addition Juan Soto has been. They do look legit.
And in stark comparison, the Blue Jays, unfortunately, often don't. It's tantalizing because you can see some of them almost
That's
being
right.
there, but then almost obviously is not good enough. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Show Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network, also streaming on sportsnet.ca and the Sportsnet app. Jays 8-3 losers to the Yankees in New York. They take the series. They send the Jays back to Toronto for the home opener tomorrow at 4-6. Give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's text line is always open. Yeah, I see a lot of text here about the offense, as we will
of
have
course.
Seen often this season. I really do feel like, Julia, that all the words that have been said on the offense by me or you or Blair and Barker or Blake or any of these guys or any of our colleagues, it feels like everything's been said that can be said, and you're just kind of rearranging these words to different
right.
combinations, because the truth is the offense has looked largely the same as it has for last year. And again, I totally understand for the optimists that 10 games is a small sample size, but when it's very similar to last year,
right.
and then when one of your only run producers, and you mentioned Justin Turner, not available today, and he obviously wasn't, otherwise he would have pinched it at some point today, right? And he didn't. So it's just, it does make you a little frustrated, and I totally understand the tenor, let's call it, of the text line. So
I can't wait.
Let me read you a couple of them.
Please.
I see one here from Andre in Toronto. This team is lucky not to be 2-8. Atkins cannot be trusted to fix this mess or rebuild. How long is the leash on him? I see I see a mark from Thorold not having Vogelbach pinch hit for Kirk in that situation shows you he's going to be DFA'd soon. That's the situation he was brought in for. Wayne from Hamilton, having Kirk and Biggio. This is something you actually spoke about on the pregame show with me,
Julia. A little bit, yep.
Having Kirk and Biggio as your 4-5 hitters should be considered a criminal offense. This lineup, aside from Turner, Springer, Vladdy, and Bichette, beyond brutal. Yeah, it might be able to play defense, but you're basically saying if the pitching staff gives up more than 4 runs, you're pretty much life and death to win a game. Wayne from Hamilton, which I find it hard to disagree with anything Wayne just said.
Yeah, the Kevin Biggio at number 5, I understand that you maybe want to have a lefty in there, sort of break up the right-handed bats, sure, but I do not understand that spot for Biggio. I really don't. When you have a guy who's as hot as Clement, who sure, struck out twice today, didn't do much else, but the truth here is that he has been a better hitter, you know, one of the best and most consistent run producers of this team. It's just not, I cannot fathom why Kevin Biggio would slide into number 5 other than, sure, let's put a left-handed bat in there. But when you're looking at lineup construction, this is something that you and I spoke about earlier in yesterday, I believe, as well. Mm-hmm. How are you going to construct this lineup in a way that you're not stranding runners as much as the Blue Jays are right now? And this is, again, what happened today, in which you load the bases twice and there's no one there to cash in, you know, big time, as the contending lineups in this league have found a way to do over and over again. So this is definitely, you know, after yesterday, we kind of, yes, the Blue Jays took the loss, but we could find a lot of positives from the way that they played. This defeat today is kind of deflating. It's kind of the other way around, right? You kind of see those positives lose their strength a little bit because the Blue Jays were just back to where they once were. And it seems a little bit like we're just, you know, rolling that boulder up the hill just to have it fall over and over and over again. Yes, the Blue Jays are walking more and they're seeing more pitches and they're, you know, they're creating traffic and then nothing. And until they can find a way, either internally or looking outside, to cash in those runs and the opportunity presents itself, this is where we're going to be. And the conversations, you're right, Show, are going to be very, very similar. 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position simply isn't going to do. 11 runners left on base simply isn't good enough.
Paul in Burlington says, hello, runners in scoring position, my old friend. I've come to haunt the Jays again. It's pretty funny, actually. Funny in a sad way, but I do appreciate the text, Paul. I see Mark and Alora and Steven and Williams Lake, BC, both with the kind of getting on Kirk a little bit here. So Steven says, Kirk can simply not ever bat fourth. What an abysmal attempt at cleaning up. I'm not impressed at all this season with our catcher position. And Mark goes a little bit further. He says, Jano can't get back soon enough. Tough to watch Kirk play this much. Hopefully when Jano returns, he stays healthy, catches 4+ games a week, limiting demand on Kirk, and hopefully that helps him reclaim some offensive value. You know, it's a good point because, I mean, no Justin Turner essentially meant, I mean, someone has to hit cleanup, but it essentially meant Kirk with, at the time this game started, the statistical, tied for the statistical lead with Schneider and Turner for RBI. I see why they put him up there from that stat alone, but it's just, it's tough. I mean, I remember in the third inning where they loaded the bases for the first time against Luis Gil. So Bo takes the walk to pack the sacks. And I turned to you and I said, man, I would kill for Justin Turner to hit this position instead of Kirk. And he did work the 4-pitch walk on Gil, who was really having some command issues. So good to see from Kirk. But there were a lot of situations like that. And the previous texter's point about not seeing Vogelbach, for example, not pinch hit for Kirk speaks to not only what Kirk is playing like, but also speaks to how Vogelbach is playing. So I don't know. That's really tough to see him in that position. I said before the season, I thought if the top 4 was Springer, Vladdy, Bo, Turner, I felt okay about having Kirk hit in a varying 5-spot, 6-spot, depending on who the opposing pitcher is, depending on how other people are hitting as well. And I definitely was also hand up someone who thought that Varsho would be a lot better offensively than he has been. So in theory, you could have had like Varsho hit 5th and Kirk hit 6th. But the truth is neither of those guys are playing well enough. It's just, I really do think beyond hyper-focusing the criticism, Julia, on Alejandro Kirk specifically. And yeah, I mean, like, these guys all deserve that. I do think it's just another indictment of this entire offense, like of the way the roster construction, to your point, has been done, because it does really feel like this team has a lot of guys who would probably on most teams hit, you know, sixth, seventh, or eighth, for example.
Here's the thing about Kirk. He did walk twice. He walked in a run, as we know, and he was one of the few Blue Jays who didn't strike out today. He has value in this lineup. It's just not at that spot. And we spoke a little bit about this pregame show when we were talking about Davis Schneider and how he fits in, and the fact that he is not getting regular playing time, even though he has been contributing offensively when given the chance. And on a day when Justin Turner is not available to bat cleanup, maybe that's a day when you do some shuffling and you put Davis Schneider in there and you let him hit number four, because this is a guy that you at least know that one, can hit for power, and two, can make decent enough contact to cash in a couple of runs, or, you know, hit the bases clearing double, or whatever it is that your team may need at that moment. I'm not saying that Schneider is going to hit a pinch hit home run or is going to, you know, be the savior of this team every time. But if you don't have your main, you know, pull guy, the guy that's been giving you that sort of power, that sort of pop, then maybe you go to the next best option right now instead of being overly fixated with statistics or projections. Again, Kirk has his value. I think that, you know, you slide him a little bit lower down in this lineup, it gives it a new dynamic and it makes it a little bit more menacing. But at number four, that's just not going to cut it. So don't want to be too critical of Kirk himself, but I do think that this is more about how this lineup is designed right now.
Still some time to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. We're here until a couple minutes past the bottom of the hour. You can also text us as well, 590-590, name and location, the people's text line always open. I like this text from John in North York, because I think it's a good summary of the team. He says, this team is flawed if the pitching is good, if Vladdy, Springer, and Bo hit, if they run the bases, if they hit with runners in scoring position. Too many ifs. And I think that's a valid way of looking at it, because it does feel like there aren't enough certainties about this team, right? Like, we spent a lot of the preseason and the spring training campaign talking about, okay, well, you need bounce backs from players X, Y, or Z, and you basically needed bounce backs from Springer, from Bo, because he was the more consistent guy, but you need bounce backs from Springer, Vladdy, Kirk, Varsho, a whole bunch of guys, essentially.
Right.
And I do still think it's possible, because 10 games is still the beginning of the season against some really tough competition. Having said that, it's not super inspiring to see how things have gone early enough. I see some other text here about Bowden Francis, and I did want to talk a little bit about Bowden Francis,
sure,
because, of course, he was starting today. There's one from Mike in Newmarket. If Bowden continues to struggle, does this make the Ricky T call-up inevitable once the service time manipulation is done? And Mike makes a good point on the service time manipulation thing, because, you know, all teams do that. As much as it might annoy everyone, all teams do it, whether or not it's fair. But it's a good point to bring up and to acknowledge early. And on Bowden Francis, so, you know, he used the splitter a bit more than we had seen, because, of course, that was a pitch he worked on in the spring, and he used it to lefty batters, including on Juan Soto, who swung and missed on it the very first time he used it in the top of the first inning, and bottom of the first inning. Still a work in progress, certainly, because then the next time up, Soto clubbed it for a hit, and it wasn't located quite as well. So,
that's right.
So there's a little bit of good, a little bit of bad on that. He was somewhat erratic early with the four-seam fastball.
Right.
And it kind of looked like he was just unwilling to bring that pitch into the zone a lot of the time. And then, of course, in that third inning, everything unraveled. He had a hard time throwing strikes just on most pitches. And then on the 2-2 count, throws the fastball inside one too many times, and Stanton bangs it for a grand slam. He just murders that baseball. And it sounded incredible off the bat, just because Stanton absolutely obliterated that thing. But it's the same story as against the Astros, right? They went out and hunted his fastball.
Right.
And even with Francis being as careful as possible, as careful as he could, at least for the first couple of innings, with that fastball, took one mistake, and it essentially turned what I thought was a solid outing through two innings to essentially a bad outing because of that. And then he didn't come back out after for the fourth inning. You saw Paolo Espino instead. But it's really too bad, Julia, because I thought he looked like he was going okay, And then he just could not command the fastball. And I think he might have just been a little afraid to throw the fastball in the zone because he got banged so much for it last time. And now here we are.
Here's the thing. It's difficult to throw that many gutsy pitches against a lineup like the Astros or against a lineup like the Yankees. I understand the reluctance in throwing a fastball over the plate, even if, you know, the velocity is up a tick, even though it wasn't today. It's difficult to ask a pitcher, especially a young pitcher, to do that over and over again consistently. And so if he was trying to paint the corners a little bit more as a way to navigate the top of that Yankees lineup, which has really come to life here against the Blue Jays in this series, that is an understandable strategy, an understandable approach. However, when you're working like that with your four-seamer, walks are a risk you take.
Yeah.
And Bowden Francis sort of was, you know, he was a victim of his own doing here with trying to be too fine with that four-seamer, trying to work around too many guys on that Yankees lineup, and it really did come back to bite him in that third inning. So tough outing for him. I think that we can still find some positives. A lot of swing and miss there. The curveball looked good once again. Ups and downs with the splitter for sure, but it's really going to be start by start with Francis moving forward.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones. Aaron joining us from Perry Sound. Aaron, what's on your mind?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my phone call. How you doing?
Good. I could be always be better after a 4-6 start to the season, Aaron, you know.
I agree. My question is, it's kind of rhetorical, but not so much. Why is it that every time Angel Hernandez is behind the plate, I have to hear him? Like, every game that guy's behind the plate, it seems like the broadcasters are mentioning something he's done, or it doesn't seem like that guy can ump a game without a mistake. Do you guys get what I mean?
Hey, no, Aaron, thanks for the call, man. I 100% agree. Like, Julia, find you a job where you have as much job security as Angel Hernandez has in his. I think it just goes back to the conversation we have all the time. And, like, we talked about this with, like, Joe West for a million years, too, but it's just like you don't really go to see baseball games to see the ump show. You go to watch the players. And I mean, like, look, he screwed everyone today. It wasn't just a Blue Jays thing. It wasn't just a Yankees thing. Like, there were a number of pitches way above the strike zone that were not strikes. And then, of course, I think it was Tim Mesa on the mound, and he lets one in there. That pitch was as middle as maybe a pitch can be, and he called it a ball.
Yeah.
It just bring me the challenge system, the automatic challenge system from the minors as soon as humanly possible.
Right.
That's one. But two, that's just baseball with Angel Hernandez. It's been like that for ages, and I don't see him changing anytime soon. But Aaron's right. I mean, you constantly hear it whenever he's umping a game.
Listen, this is something that I interviewed Jen Powell, one of the umps who is in AAA this year and umpired some spring training games as well. And, you know, she was pretty clear in sort of conveying that if no one is talking about you, if no one is seeing you, that means that you are doing your job as an umpire. And so there are certain guys and certain names that we are so used to hearing in the broadcast, and that really tells you everything that you need to know. Umpires are better when they're kind of invisible.
Yeah, I think that goes doubly so, I think, for Angel Hernandez, based on essentially his entire career. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590. Before we take a quick break, let's go back to the phones. Russ joining us from New Jersey. Russ, what's on your mind today?
It's getting late early. That's all I'm going to say. I know we're only 10 games into the season and that, but this team is just, this offense is pitiful. 5 hits today again. Obviously, the pitching hasn't been there, but, you know, when we got down 5-1, and it's funny because the 10th game last season, I remember vividly, Blue Jays were down 6-0 to the Angels, and they came back. That was against Chapman, hit a grand slam out in California before they came home to play Detroit. But you look at it, they go down 5-1, and I look and I say, okay, who's coming? You know, 5-1's it's a big hole to come back from, but it's early in the game. And I look, okay, who's coming up? And it's Clement, Varsho, Canafilippa, and if anybody gets on Kiermaier, this isn't a lineup. It falls on one person. It falls on Mr. Atkins. I know people are, Schneider, this. It's not about the manager. This lineup is horrible. And I'll tell you, even Springer, remember, Springer's 33, 34 years old, and there's a lot of miles on those legs, especially plays the game so hard, and he played a lot of playoff games. He's an older 33, 34, whatever he is. But this team, the bottom of the lineup, it's terrible. It's awful to watch. And if you don't win a game 2-1 or 3-2, you're not going to win with the Blue Jays. 5 hits today, it's unwatchable. I just don't know. You look at the back of the baseball card. Everyone says, back of the baseball card. There's nothing to prove that any of these guys are going to hit any better. Clemente, Kiermaier, Marvarsho, the 230 hitter, that's going to go down to one of the worst trades the Blue Jays have made in a long, long time.
Hey, Russ, appreciate the call, man. Thanks for joining us here on Jays Talk. Yeah, I see the offense play like this so often, Julia, and I think the more I see it, and again, we saw it the entirety of last year, but the more it continues this year, certainly there's less of a willingness for fans, and I don't blame them, to accept this state of the offense, and like Russ eloquently put, but like I remember when Stanton hit the Grand Slam, right? And I thought to myself, I don't even remember the last time the Jays hit like a real grand slam, because there was a grand slam I think Vladdy hit off a position player in Tampa. I think that was last year. But an actual in-game off a real pitcher grand slam, I can't remember. Yeah. I don't remember when the last time it happened.
Yeah.
It just seems like the Jays always get the short end, right? Like no grand slams, no big moments. They get slammed. No hitters, and they get no note instead. I know no hitters are a rare event, but still, I mean, there hasn't been one in my adult life, essentially, right? It just, for me, it would be nice to experience something fun on the positive end
for
of
sure.
it instead of consistently seeing the Jays get the shaft. And if I feel that way, I can only imagine how the fans feel, because it really is exhausting.
Yeah, and to Russ's point, too, last year, especially in the early going, you still had hope that this team would rally back, that this team would come back and actually get the clutch hits, because they did it early on in the season. They, opening day was a slugfest that the Blue Jays came out on top against the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Those moments still existed early on, and then something shifted and they just stopped. So I understand that this may be an even more frustrating start to the season than last year was, because we are not seeing that willingness or that ability to at least make things interesting. Sure, yesterday was kind of an interesting game, and it was, it turned into a nail biter later on, but it was too late. It very clearly, the Blue Jays ran out of innings to mount that comeback. And so it's difficult to look at right now and say, well, this is similar to last year, because it isn't. Because last year there was still some life to the bats early on, and there was still some hope from the fan base that this would that the Blue Jays could turn things around at any point with one swing of the bat. Which is why, I think, just to come back to Don Mattingly's statement pregame, in which he said that damage is somewhat of a scary word, and this is not, and he doesn't see the Blue Jays as much of a power team. That's problematic when what you're seeing right now from this offense is an inability to either hit for power or to get the clutch hits or to, cash in any way. So if this is not a power team, if this is not the identity that the Blue Jays want to pursue, what is? And I think that will be the question that they need to answer or start to answer when they come home here. Because, okay, if you don't see the team like that, then what do you see it as? And how can you move forward and actually get those wins?
That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Let's step aside, take a very quick break. When we go back, still some time to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can also shoot us a text if that's easier, 590-590, name and location. That's the People's Text Line. We'll continue on the text line and with your calls after this. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, up and down, ran into some tough pitching for sure. Had our chances, left the bases loaded today. Had a chance to win the series here and didn't, but just up and down, both sides of the ball, whether it was offense or pitching. 10 on the road is tough. Guys are really looking forward to getting home, as am I. and hopefully find some consistency. But I think it was just really up and down.
That is John Schneider speaking to the media about his, as he says, up and down road trip. 4-6, the Blue Jays come back from the road trip as they head back to the friendly, you hope, confines of the Rogers Center tomorrow for a series starting at home tomorrow, 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, against the Seattle Mariners. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz with you for a scant few minutes, Julia. Let's go to the text line, 590-590, name and location. See one here from, and I apologize if I'm getting your name wrong, Ilo or Illo in Coburg. Says, let's talk Vladdy. How long do we rest on hope? Or is he just an okay player? It's like, I mean, that we're going to have that conversation like forever, it feels like, Julia.
I think so. Until he either walks or there's a major extension. We don't know what's coming on that end. But I do think that it's going to be a conversation for as long as he's here, unless he can figure out, you know, retrieve the form. Listen, it's in there, right? We know that there is a 50 home run hitter in there somewhere. We saw it in 2021. It's just a matter of trying to fit that in with the mentality that he currently has and with the Blue Jays game plan and with the many, many voices that seem to be around him right now, trying to get the most of his swing. Streamlining that communication, making sure that he gets the point across and he doesn't freeze at the plate or he's not jumpy as we saw him yesterday, making sure that he's just driving the ball consistently. That is going to be something that we're probably going to talk about for as long as Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is around, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's true. We're going to have that conversation for ages. It's just interesting. So Hector Gomez from Z101 in the Dominican Republic, he retweeted this from a producer of a podcast who actually posted a video. It was a video of this guy, John Tsang, chatting with Vladdy in the dugout at Yankee Stadium. So he clearly went to New York and had this conversation during this series. And this was the translation, because the conversation was in Spanish. This was the translation. He asked Vladdy about a possible contract extension. Okay. So this is what the transcript was in English. I would like the Blue Jays to offer me a contract extension, but they have not done so yet. Right now I am focused day after day. I'm calm because no matter what, they are going to have to pay me sooner or later, whether it's this team or another. Yeah. So Vladdy clearly looking forward to it. He probably is going to get paid by someone, but I'm not sure he's shown enough to get like the Bobby Witt Jr. deal. I mean, maybe that's a bad example because Bobby Witt Jr. has a lot of free agent years, RB years that were kind of bought with that contract, but he's not getting like the Trey Turner deal, right? He's not getting the massive deal. Even if he had been a giant producer, first baseman typically just don't get those kinds of deals.
Yeah, that's a very interesting. I will admit that I hadn't seen that tweet and I'm looking forward to looking at the video as well. But if that is indeed the case, then you kind of, you know, some teams we know don't really speak about contract, don't do contract negotiations in season.
Right, right.
Because they do think that, you know, the focus should stay on the field and all of that. And I understand that point. Mark Shapiro spoke during spring training. He was asked about, you know, contract extensions for guys like Bo and Vlad, and he's very cryptic, right? And what he says is that these conversations are always ongoing, but they are always very secretive because of the nature of the subject. So not a ton coming from the Blue Jays there. And it's interesting to see Vladdy be as open as he was in this interview. But I don't think anyone expects something to happen mid-season here, Show. It does seem like this is something that the Blue Jays, you know, historically have looked at the offseason as a target time. And so that's what we should expect from Vlad as well.
You know, let's end on a relatively positive note, Jules. What do you think?
Sure, yeah.
We've been pretty negative this whole show, so let's end. You know, let's
home
end
opener on mood here.
Yeah, yeah. Let's look ahead. And Bo Bichette, kind of, sort of, I would say, got off the schneid. I think this was Bo's best game of the season so far. Two walks, a strongly hit RBI double. He did strike out towards the end of the game, but still, if that's what you can hope to get a little bit more from with Bo Bichette as this season continues, at least maybe the top of the order will look a little different. I know the Vladdy stuff will still be a little concerning, maybe a little bit for Springer as well. But it was encouraging to see what we got, the two walks and the RBI double from Bo today.
Yeah, this was definitely one of the best performances that we have seen from Bo. We know that, you know, with the neck spasms, that situation, kind of missing a couple of games, maybe he was out of rhythm, and that is why we saw him struggle in his return. But, you know, coming in, this is what Bo does best, is kind of using the whole field. It's hitting those line drives. And it was encouraging show to see him and Vlad sort of combine for that RBI. Vladdy hits his double, which was also scorched. And then Bo comes in and drives him in with a double of his own. Hey, if the Blue Jays can get a little bit more of that, right? If these guys can continue to drive in each other at that top four, then maybe the conversations will change a little bit coming into this home stretch and into, you know, the rest of the month of April. However, consistency is going to be the name of the game here, Sho. And yes, it's encouraging. Now, can the Blue Jays turn that into, you know, the norm rather than the outlier?
I certainly hope they do, because in the next several weeks, at least certainly in the next week or so, they're going to be playing a lot of games at home, and you do not, I don't want to hear the boo birds at the Rogers Center. Let's put it that way. But yeah. But I think that the tenor of the fan base is right. Growing a little, patience growing a little thin, so we'll definitely have to see. You and I are back on Jays Talk next weekend.
That's
and
right.
I guess we'll see if that is true in a week's time when they face the Rockies.
Looking forward to it, and I think we're going to be at the ballpark for that too.
We will. I can't wait to see it. Can't wait to be there with you. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Ross Control Centers in Head of St. Margaret's Bay and Hammonds Plains, Nova Scotia. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at Crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Julia Kreutz, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Nick Blackmore, Tom Young, I'm Sho Ali. Jays 8-3 losers today this Sunday. That does it for us. Blair and Barker back on the air all week long. The homestand begins tomorrow. The guys have Jays Talk for Seattle and Colorado. Like I said, Julia and I are back next weekend. We'll talk to you then.